You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 13 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb global headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Chantal Marx, cement manufacturers, and Myron Roberts. We're talking with Theresa. They've commissioned their chrome beneficiation plant, and they had a massively strong PGM update. But I want to dig into chrome. It's important in their life. It's about a third of their revenue and a quarter of their profits. And then we're talking with Ntabeleng Monko, about you. She's from UNISA. A review of the LTEX. Has it been the success that the JSC hoped for? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Myron Roberts expands into US market with a 423 million rand deal. So that's part of their strategy, diversifying, growing into the North American region. This is their infrastructure, resources and energy platform. Business Day, IMF bumps up SA's 2021 growth forecast. They've moved our GDP up a whole percentage point from 4 to 5. Of course, the 2022 one not looking so great at 2.2%. Morning markets, US is red. S&P was off a quarter of a percent, the Nasdaq down a third. Asia's mixed with Sydney down a tenth and Tokyo up a third. Commodities mixed with gold, 1,762. Brent, 83.16, a little bit down there. And palladium at 2,050, also a little bit down. It was 21.11 this time yesterday. Rand, 14.95. Top 40 opening call, 60 points down. That's 0.1% to the red.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marx, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning time. I mentioned the cement manufacturers there, two on the JSC, Sopaku, PPC, both been flying. Both had sort of a tricky couple of years, particularly PPC. And there was a moment last year where it looked like a massive rights issue might be in the cards. That seems off the table. Your take on these cement makers? I mean, certainly government saying we won't use imported cement is great for them. How much of a significant game changer is it going to be? Are they worth having a look at?
So, Simon, I think it's definitely going to help. PPC at their last set of results said that imported cement accounts for about 10% of total volumes in South Africa, which is quite substantial. I mean, if you consider that we only have three big players in South Africa, the listed ones, PPC and Sopaku, as you mentioned, and then you have AfriSam as well. If you kind of split that between them, then you do have a really nice volume uplift coming through and all the benefits that come with higher volumes, more efficiency, lower per unit cost. That filters straight to the bottom line. So there definitely is a benefit there. The thing is just that government can't force the private sector to not use cheap imported cement. But yeah, I mean, I think that the benefits here really do outweigh the costs. And yeah, it could possibly be quite good for them. Whether or not that's already reflected in the price, I think, is a different story.
Well, yeah, I mean, PPC is up 11-fold since late last year, which may be not completely fair, but it might be in that price. Even Sopaku had a giant couple of days on the market. Moving quickly to Myron Roberts, they announced a deal at 400-odd million rand to buy a construction company in America. They're in North America already, but it was really only Texas. It was only oil. Large contract, which ends, I think, June of next year. A nice little bolt-on for them.
Yeah, access to 22 states, which I think is quite a decent footprint in the U.S. And also a little bit of exposure in terms of the oil sector, but more down the value chain. Mm-hmm. So this company, for example, has an in-house fabrication facility, and they design and fabricate oil storage tanks So it's kind of a little bit different for them, which I think is a great compliment to the existing business there. And it's not that expensive. I mean, if you look at the price relative to the EBITDA that they provided us, it looks decent relative to Murray and Roberts' own metrics. Mm-hmm. Adds to geographic diversification, which is something that they've been pushing quite hard. And I mean, the 400 odd million rand, given is almost 700 million rand net cash position, isn't going to break the bank. So a nice little bolt on for them, I think.
Yep, and they can pretty much pay cash for it. And I suppose with the Biden administration talking about literally trillions of dollars of infrastructure, this could be a significant player over the years when that finally gets through Congress and the Senate.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at where their footprint is at the moment, so you have South Africa to a certain extent in power and water, where infrastructure is being targeted. In Australia, infrastructure rollout to stimulate the economy post-COVID-19 going to benefit Murray and Roberts. Now in the US as well, very similar kind of approach taken by the Biden administration. And remember, these guys are still quite big in mining. And we are only now starting to see the mining capex cycle pick up. So I think we're in for a very exciting few years for Murray and Roberts, if they can keep it together.
Ooh, big if there. I agree with you. I actually hold some Murray and Roberts, and that is an if there. There's a lot of moving parts. And construction is deeply cyclical and deeply high risk. Chantal Marks, Head Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Phoevos Pirolis, CEO of Theresa. They had a trading update, a production update yesterday, which was a giant numbers there, but also day before, commissioning of their chrome beneficiation plant, and which happened. Phoevos, appreciate the early morning time. I want to delve into this chrome story. Is chrome extracted from the same ore bodies as your PGMs? You're one of those fortunate miners. You went sort of mining for PGM, and there was some chrome as well.
Morning, Simon, and great to be on your show again. Yeah, so I think from the outset, you know, this is a greenfields project that we developed from exploration. We took a relatively unknown reef horizon in the Bushveld complex, known the Middle Group Reef Horizon, which historically was only mined on two of the five seams for chrome, and we identified that there were actually elevated platinum group metal elements within all five seams. So what it did was it allowed us to create a very large scale, low cost, mechanized open pit infrastructure to co-produce and co-extract both platinum group metals and chrome concentrates. So typically when people refer to middle group, they always think of chrome, but in our case, it's a very rich and very profitable platinum group metal mine with the chrome as the bulk commodity. So by volume, it will always be the larger in quantum. But value-wise, PGMs, obviously, with the elevated basket price, carry more weight. It's a unique project and really has shown its resilience through the cyclicality of the commodity cycle. So very, very privileged. And you mentioned that Vulcan ultra-fine chrome plant.
Yeah.
And really, that's just us pushing the boundaries of what's recoverable. So historically, ultra-fine chrome was never recovered through conventional processing. And through our in-house R&D team, we developed a multi-stage process to extract this chrome. So instead of reincurring the cost of mining or milling, we're taking our waste stream and we're recovering that fine chrome. So quite unique and exciting in terms of just pushing us down the cost curve, reducing our carbon footprint per ton of chrome that we produce. So it's a great time.
Right. Yeah, and in-house. I mean, you glossed over that. That's an important point. I mean, it is an in-house technology, and it takes your recoveries from 62% to 82% odd. As you say, that then takes you down the cost curve. And Chrome, I mean, it's an important part of your business. I mean, it's about a third of your revenue, about a quarter of profits. That, of course, is before the commissioning of this plant, which, as I understand, will be online, fully online by the end of this year.
That's correct. So yes, it's just improving those efficiencies, getting those recoveries up to 82%, as you say. And yeah, so it's a meaningful part of our business. And you have to remember that South Africa hosts more than 70% of the world's chrome resources. So we're a key supplier into that. Really, it's driven by the stainless steel market, which it's not only an Asia-centric story, it's a global story. You know, post-COVID, we've seen North America, Europe bounce back in terms of stainless steel production, growth, and consumption. So really, the outlook for we call it a late cycle commodity, being stainless steel, is very positive. We look at the infrastructure refit in the US, you know, those old bridges, old airports that need to be rebuilt really from scratch. We'll use a lot of this stainless steel, mainly for their corrosion resistance properties.
That's fair. I mean, every time I think stainless steel, oddly enough, the picture in my head is that bumper from the Grease movie from the early 70s with John Travolta. I'd forgotten, of course, it's the corrosion. How is it traded? Is it a spot market? Is it futures? Is it contract?
So chrome particularly is on a bilateral contract basis. So there's no exchange that it's traded on in ferrochrome, the intermediate product, similarly. So in terms of stainless steel, there are published prices, and there's a myriad of grades, you know, depending whether you're doing aeronautical stainless steels, Elon Musk's rockets, or whether you're going to surgical steels, or construction ferritic stainless steels, more chrome content. So it's the chrome and nickel balance really that determines the quality of that stainless steel. So it's very diverse in its application.
Yeah, more than the bumper from Greece. And as you mentioned, I mean, when I've been in hospitals and stuff, you look around it. It's actually, the more I think about it, the more I'm seeing it everywhere I look. Let's quickly switch to your production update from yesterday. Really, really strong production update. PGM basket been under pressure. We've seen a bounce in the last couple of days. You're still optimistic over the next couple of years. I mean, the PGM story, once we start getting my senses, vehicle manufacturing back to normal, and that of course requires chip production back to normal, the PGM story remains robust.
Absolutely. So this is a temporary supply setback. The fundamentals are still sound. If you look at the pent-up demand of auto demand, it's real and tangible, and you speak to all the automakers and they'll tell you the same. It's merely this chip shortage that we're all aware of that's put a dent in that growth trajectory and actually fulfilling that demand. If we look at the global decarbonization imperative, it means that we need to put more PGMs into our internal combustion engines to meet increasing emission standards. Now, the battery electric vehicle is always the counter to it. The guys are saying, yeah, the whole world's going to be electrified by 2025. Parts of it, yeah, where you can do it, great. But I mean, there's a limitation and practicality to that. Light industrial, heavy industrial, you know, the technologies are not quite there yet. They're not deployed. So, you know, we don't see the end of the internal combustion engine at a point in time. I think there will be a mix, and a rightfully so mix, but I think as these emission standards improve, we'll see more stringent application, and that means more PGM loadings, which in effect gives us a good medium term outlook. Then we put the overlay of the hydrogen economy and the critical role that platinum and some of the minor metals play, and then we have a long life positive outlook for PGM. So all in all, you know, robust fundamentals.
Yeah, robust fundamentals. I mean, EV is certainly coming, but as you said, it'll be a hybrid. And in South Africa, Eskom's going to say, hold my beer. That's not going to work. Phoevos Pirillis, CEO of Tharisa, appreciate your time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Tamaleng Marco, a dissertation, a thesis dissertation out of the University of South Africa, written by her, looking at the old text, reviewing it from the period 2008 to 2018. And many of you are like, oh, the old text, forgot about that. But it is still around. Started life almost 20 years ago, October 2003. Still there. Tamaleng, appreciate your time this morning. The idea behind the old text was an easier route for listing for those smaller companies. That the period you looked through, you say that during the period, 37 companies moved to the main board, 38 remained listed, 55 delisted. I suppose, in a sense, moving to main board is like an indication of the success. I mean, is your research? I mean, has the Altex been a roaring success? Is 37 moving to main board a significantly large enough number?
Good morning, Simon. Ideally, yes, the JSE Altex was initially started to be a catalyst for these high growth potential SMEs. However, the results of our study indicate that it is not so convincing. It has had its fair share of successes, but the majority of companies list expecting great performance, but it has not yielded these results. We tested 19 ratios and for listed, delisted, and migrated companies. And in terms of what we found, there were minimal benefits that these companies derived from listing on the JSE Altex during this period.
Yeah, and one of the issues, and you talk about it, was perceived risks. And the one issue, I mean, it's not a perceived risk. It is that liquidity is an issue for investors. Selling when you want to exit can really drop a price. The lower listing requirements also created that perception. In a sense, it was an easier route. I suppose it was perhaps slightly a smaller company, therefore a higher risk company, because it's difficult to grow into a giant one. But the risks have almost scared away the investors, and the numbers of delistings have equally done so.
Yes. Unlike the main board, the listing requirements of the JSE are less onerous. Mm. So this creates a perceived risk for the investors, because in essence, the JSE Altex does not have heavily traded stocks, and it's not a market where there are many buyers and sellers. And in essence, no investor wants to lose money, and the perceived risk of these companies is very high, because unlike many JSE main board companies, there's not much information in the public domain. They are relatively unknown, so it becomes difficult to gauge their credibility. And these listing requirements have kind of created a diluted perception.
Yeah, I like that point. That's a diluted perception. I remember when Noah Greenhill listed this back, or started the board back in 2003. At the time, he was at the JSE. They were kind of copying the AIM from the London. AIM has been a large success. Altex seems not to have been a magic one. That's what I take out from your research. Is there something that you think the JSE could potentially do to try and improve its appeal to both companies, but also to investors?
The honest truth is that it's time for reflection. There needs to be a needs analysis and stakeholder perception. That's very important to identify stumbling blocks and adequate preparation for these companies, and to also encourage these companies to place more information in the public domain to clarify various misconceptions. It's interesting to note that the Small Business Institute says 6% of these high growth potential SMEs firms list on the JSE Altex. Mm-hmm. So we also need to understand what the other 94% that is still existent, that's not listed, is doing, that the Altex hasn't been able to provide these high growth potential companies with. So it's very important to pull in various resources and to reflect, because the honest truth from what we found in our research is that if we look at growth and sustainability, the Altex is not doing what it should for these high growth potential SMEs.
Yeah, I take your point. That is the honest truth. And I love your point there. Where are the other 94%? What are they doing? We'll leave that there. Appreciate the time this morning. Tumbling Mko, University of South Africa, reviewing that Altex. It was a great idea. There's a lot of fanfare. I remember it at the time, but perhaps not quite what we had hoped. Our poll today on our LinkedIn and Twitter: do you look for stocks on the Altex? Does it matter what board they listed on, or are you agnostic? You can have your vote. You can have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter accounts. That's it for today. I thought yesterday we were talking coal stocks and coal generally and the longevity of it. Ultimately, coal is over, but in the meantime, it is doing great. We said, are you buying coal stocks? Are you owning coal stocks? Just over half of you said yes, absolutely loving it. Just under half of you, therefore, were either saying nope, you don't like it, you're not interested because of the dirty angle for it, or that actually it's about renewables and the future is renewables. But for now, there certainly is money to be made in coal. Remember, LinkedIn, Twitter, have your vote, have your say on our daily polls. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Masekhla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.